Blog.
Welcome to another great show of Suspense Radio, live from Los Angeles, California, site of Carmageddon 2011. I'm your host, John Robb. I want to thank all of you for listening live and those who will hear this on replay. We are back from Thriller Fest that we just attended last weekend in New York City. Fabulous event. I praise it all the time. I can't say enough about it. But this morning, we are going to have two powerhouse best-selling authors for you. First up is going to be Jeff Abbott talking about his latest novel, Adrenaline, and his newest character, Sam Capra. Next, we are going to have Andrew Gross back to discuss his latest novel, Eyes Wide Open, which he puts a much more personal spin on than his other last novels. So it's time to sit back, relax, because 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now. Everybody for joining us here on this great morning. We have the Suspense Radio with two fabulous authors, Jeff Abbott and Andrew Gross. If you excuse me, I'm a little bit, have a cough, not sure why, not sure if it's because of Carmageddon and all the dust that they're flying up here in Los Angeles. If you haven't heard of it, yes, we are in the middle of a huge traffic nightmare in Los Angeles, so it's good to just be sitting at home, especially in the Southern California area, listening to the show. So we want to go ahead and start right off, and we want to bring our first guest on the show, which is best-selling author Jeff Abbott, and has great news because his book, Adrenaline, just hit number 23 on the New York Times bestseller list, which is always fabulous news we love to hear. So, Jeff, we want to thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, and I'll tell you, your book, Adrenaline, when you have a title like Adrenaline, you know, that's something that you really have to do. You really have to keep the reader pumped and just running and racing all the time. So can you tell everybody a little bit about Adrenaline and why you decided to go, with a new series here with Sam Capra?
Adrenaline is really a thriller about family. It features Sam Capra, like you mentioned, who is a young CIA agent working in London. And he is married to another CIA agent who's 7 months pregnant. And, you know, he's got this really good, happy life. And as the book opens, he is in his office in London and gets a phone call from his wife asking him to come outside. And she sounds sort of upset and panicked. And her being pregnant, you know, he's worried and he does so. And as soon as he gets out on the street, he sees her in a car with a man he doesn't recognize. His office explodes behind him, killing all his colleagues, and the car with his wife races off. And because of some stuff that comes out, Sam is accused of treason, and he has to escape from the CIA and go on the hunt for the people who have taken his wife and now have his newborn child and find out the truth about why all this happened.
So really, I mean, when you're talking, like I said, like Adrenaline, I mean, this is a race, family, deep emotional, you know, personal issues going on here. Is that something that you envisioned when you first decided to, you know, bring the character Sam Capra? Is that what you wanted to go for?
Well, when I first thought of Sam Capra, I had thought of doing a series for a while because people kept asking me if the characters from my standalone thrillers would ever come back in, you know, in a second book. And I thought, well, you know, I have to make sure I have the right kind of character. And one day I was just doodling instead of writing. Don't tell my editor. But I drew a picture of a globe because I kept thinking I want someone who can travel the world. He has a legitimate reason to travel the world. And underneath that globe, I drew a martini glass. I don't know why I just did. And I thought, bars around the world. What if someone owned bars around the world? How would how would this person have come into ownership of these bars? What would their background be? And I started thinking about it, and that was the very seed of Sam Capra, because in the course of the book, he does come into these ownership of these bars around the world, and it's something that sort of can help serve as his basis for his the hunt for his family. And I thought it would be something fun and different, but I knew I didn't want to just start the book with him being this sort of, international bar owner. I wanted to get to the point to understand how he became this guy who travels the world and gets involved in adventures and stories. And to do that first, I had to establish sort of the background, the story with his family.
And when you decide to go this route, because you have written, you know, many standalone books here, and you decide to go with something like a series, how kind of apprehensive are you to kind of throw yourself into that because you haven't really been, you know, you haven't really done that before in your writing career?
Well, I'm consistently apprehensive. I mean, that's just a given. But yeah, it was a little unnerving. I had written two previous series before, quite a while back, that are still in print and had done pretty well. But they were definitely sort of more mystery-oriented, you know, with a more of the amateur detective type. And I wanted to take the good points, the parts that are fun for an author to write a series, which is, you know, getting to explore characters, you know, over the course of several books. But I didn't want to be bound by the things that could be problematic in a series, like a really large recurring cast or always being in the same setting. So what I like with Sam, and what became increasingly fun for me as I've been working on the subsequent books, is that I can have him be anywhere in the world, wherever he owns a bar. I've said there's about 30 of them, but I haven't said what all the 30 cities are. And, you know, there are new characters that he is encountering at the bars. He has people who are sort of help him, the managers of the bars, and they can always be very different and distinct characters. So it gives me a lot of the flexibility of a standalone, but it keeps it kind of in the nice structure of a series. So I feel right now with Sam, I have the best of both worlds.
And I'll remind everybody, we're speaking here with New York Times bestselling author, international bestselling author, Jeff Abbott. Your website is jeffabbott.com. Your latest book is Adrenaline, features Sam Capra. So, and you mentioned something that was interesting was when you have a mystery series and you have a, you know, young detective, mystery series whodunit, when you kind of think of Sherlock Holmes or Hercule Poirot, the two main, you know, biggest ones, there's not a lot of background, and a lot of people that read those don't really look for background in those kind of characters because they like the mystery. Mm-hmm. So now that you have to write Sam Capra, you have to create the whole background, the whole thing moving forward. So I think it was very interesting and very calculated that you did not release all the information about it because now you have a lot of room to grow with him.
I do. I mean, I've established some basic things about Sam. We know that he grew up wandering the world because his parents worked for a relief agency. And so he had, you know, he had exposure to different cultures. He learned bits and pieces of different languages. He was a kid who got bored easily, so he learned some skills growing up in places in the third world that normally American teenagers wouldn't know about. And then he entered the CIA because his brother followed in his parents' footsteps and went into relief work, but was tragically killed in a video by the Taliban because his brother had gone to Afghanistan. And this is when Sam was still in college, and losing his brother sort of set the course for the choice he made to go into the CIA instead of continuing the family tradition of going into relief work. So I've sketched out that background, but I haven't gone very deep into it in Adrenaline. I think I'll go deeper into it in future books. But I wanted to, you know, give just a taste of learning what his background is. And I think there's a lot more I can explore.
Now, when you decided to go with the series, is this something that your publisher was kind of like, I don't know, we kind of like the standalones, or were they like all for it, like, Jeff, it's about time you do this?
Well, I laugh because my British publisher bought the book first, and I actually changed publishers in America when I decided to do Sam. But when for the Brits, I think they were really not wanting me to do a series. And we're sort of gently saying that. And I wrote a couple of pages describing Sam in detail. I wasn't really even sure what the first book would be. I just wrote about the character. And I laughed because my editor there called my British agent and said, well, we want to buy it. We want to buy it just because we really, really like this character. And I wasn't even sure what the story of the first book was going to be. So they had been the reluctant ones, and they really got behind it, which was exciting.
And it always has to be a little nerve-wracking. I always ask authors when you start going into a different direction, how nervous were you when you finished the book and then you put it out there and to have your fans kind of accept it because this is something different than you've done before?
Well, I tried to focus actually on the things I thought were similar. Definitely there are some differences when you're launching into more of a suspense series. But the books have always been a lot about family and family relationships, and that was true whether I was writing a traditional mystery or I was writing more of a thriller. So I think there are some elements that are always present in my work, and I think readers like those. But my thought with Adrenaline was this is my chance to reach a lot of new readers who haven't read any of the previous books and may not have any particular expectations of what I'm like as a writer. So you always hope that the readers that you treasure who have been with you the whole way through will come along this next time and stay with you, and you hope that you'll draw a new audience. But I heard from a lot of people who've been reading my books over the past several years, and they really, really like Sam. So I thought, okay, if there's a balance to be struck there, and I hope I struck it.
So the fans are really emailing you and saying how wonderful it is because, you know, you've had so much success with a lot of your books. A couple of them either winning awards or you've been nominated for so many awards. So you kind of had a lot of pressure, I think, on you from that standpoint. I mean, is that something that you felt also?
Yeah. I mean, you want to keep the readers that you have. You want to attract new readers. And, you know, the start of a series is often a really good point to do that, especially in attracting new readers. Readers really do love series. And, you know, I think as long as you've created a character that they're willing to follow, you have a shot with that. So it was exciting. I mean, I was writing the book and really not knowing how it would turn out, but I was also thinking, like, you got to deliver. You really, really got to deliver now. I mean, the readers, I don't feel like the readers put as much pressure on me as I put on myself just because I don't want to waste their time or their money, if that makes sense, that they're giving that to me when they take on one of my books. And I just, you know, I don't want to disappoint them. I'm always trying to think about the audience.
Now, and looking at from the business side and seeing how you've been doing this for a while now, you've seen publishing now change from one thing all the way over to another. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges facing yourself or newer authors coming into the future with the way that the landscaping of publishing has changed so dramatically?
Well, I still think the biggest challenge, irregardless of all the format changes and the rise of e-books and, you know, our physical bookstores going to survive, all that stuff, I still think the biggest challenge is books are not competing with each other. Books are competing with all other forms of entertainment. And publishing as a whole needs to think more about how do we reach out to readers and get them interested in books and develop new readers. I get a lot of emails from older teenagers who say, I don't normally read for pleasure, but I picked up one of your books, and now I want to read your other books, and can you tell me who else you think I might enjoy reading? And sometimes those are older teenage boys, which is probably, you know, the dead spot among readerships.
That
we're not reading.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them don't bother with it. They would rather go to movies and play video games and be on the internet, and that's our challenge. How do we get back to reading being a central part of the recreational experience? You know, it's fun, but it's also good for your brain to do this. And I think that's just that's the biggest challenge to the industry. I don't care if people are reading e-books or physical books, using the library, buying books, whatever. All of that is good. We need to get reading back to being a central entertainment in our society.
And, you know, I've asked that question numerous times to numerous authors. You're the first one that's ever answered it quite that way. A lot of them talk about the e-book change and whatnot, but for you to say that it should be a central focus point, because, like, you know, both of us growing up, cable TV was very new. There was really no video games. You never wanted to be inside. You always wanted to be outside. Now everybody wants to be inside because that's
right.
Where all the entertainment is. So
right.
It is very interesting, and it's great. And do you ever, you know, go to high schools and places like that and give talks to high school students about your books and about other things just to try to get them to read? Is that something that you do?
No, I haven't. I've been asked to do that a couple of times, and I do it when I'm asked and when it's local. But, you know, I don't even know that it's stressed sort of in that particular way. Where I hear a lot from teenagers is via Facebook or through email.
Yep.
And, you know, I laugh because it's so cool. There's even a group of Turkish teenagers on Facebook who created a website of them taking pictures of themselves reading my books, and they called it Jeff Abbott Turkey, which I love because I think there should be a comma or a colon somewhere in there. But, you know, it's awesome to see kids being excited about books. So, you know, I just encourage my kids to read all the time. They enjoy reading. I try to introduce a lot of books to them. If they don't like a book, they put it down. I try to find another book that they're going to like. You just have to kind of, you know, keep at it.
Now, when you get emails and you get, you know, and you go out and you're doing signings for Adrenaline, your latest book here, again, we're talking with Jeff Abbott, and it's jeffabbott.com to find information. So when people come up to you and they say, hey, you know, I just read Adrenaline, or I just picked up Adrenaline and they loved it, and then they say, I want to go back and read some of your other books, which one do you kind of steer them to say, you know what, why don't you start with this one first and then kind of work your way through the rest of them?
I don't always have a book. Sometimes I'll ask them a little bit about what else they kind of like, because some of my earlier books are definitely more in the Agatha Christie style of mystery, you know, in a small town, and others are definitely more thriller-esque, although I find a lot of people read them all. A lot of people do, you know, want to read, like, Panic next, because that one sold about 500,000 copies in Britain and did really, really well. And that was the first one that was picked up for film development. So sometimes they've heard of that one. And that one seems to be one that's easy, you know, to find there in the bookstores. So, and plus, you know, there's sort of that chase feel to it that also happens in Adrenaline. So Panic is a good one to start with.
And now, with like Panic, did it ever make it to the screen? Did it make it to the movie?
It is still in development. It's been under option now for a few years, but the Weinsteins, Harvey and Bob Weinstein, have it under option, and they keep renewing it. And Collision is also under option and in development. And Adrenaline is under option, and I haven't signed all the paperwork on it yet, so I can't really talk too much about it, but I'm really excited about the team that has optioned it. I think they could do a really wonderful job with Sam Capra.
So you got three possible out there. That's got to be extremely exciting. You know, I don't know what your kind of goal was when you decided to start writing. You know, was it to maybe have something that goes to film? Was it to win awards? Or was it to just plainly just write and just entertain people?
Just really to write and to entertain people. You know, I mean, sometimes I'll be talking about the books and someone will be like, oh, and if they make them into films, won't that be wonderful? And it was like, yes, but it's wonderful that they're a book too. You know, it's not one is higher than the other. One may reach more people, but the book is the book and the film will be something different. And I'm not really involved with the films. And I hope they'll get made and I hope they'll be good, but I don't. That's one of the things I don't sweat about. But, yeah, I mean, it's always exciting when Hollywood is interested in your work. But I'm, you know, right now that's all sort of, you know, what if. We'll see if it happens or not. I just take the checks and run and worry about writing the next book.
Nice. See, that's what you got to do. Just take the checks and run. Let Hollywood
deal with it. No, it makes
you
sound like a bank robber.
So, you know, kind of on the lighter side, when you're out there and you're doing events and, you know, I'm sure you have, you know, a media schedule that you did for Adrenaline or you're still in the middle of and you get emails, what's kind of the funniest thing that kind of sticks out over your years here of a question or somebody just doing something funny at one of your signings that you just remember that's just a funny story about it?
Oh, gosh. To think for a second. A lot of times people say things that are sort of unintentionally funny, or they're only funny to me. Gosh.
Is anybody crazy, like just like being a streaker through the store saying, I got the book, and then they're just running like streaking or anything that's kind of strange on the road?
Well, there was an arrest made at my last signing. Does that count?
See?
There you go. It was actually the night we found out that I was on the New York Times list. We were en route to this event at a really wonderful library in Dallas, and I was giving a talk, and we'd had a great turnout, and my wife was in the very back of the room, and she looked out from this auditorium into the library's lobby. I mean, this is a big library, multi-story, you know, in a suburb in Dallas, and she saw the police putting handcuffs on this lady, and she was like, should I shut the door? What if the lady bolts for it and runs into the middle of Jeff's signing, you know? And unfortunately, it turned out, I guess this was a person who needed to be on some medications that she had not taken, and she had started lobbing books at the librarians out in by the checkout area, and the police came and took her so she could go have her medications. But I was like, you can't make this stuff up, you know. There's just always something funny or interesting that's going to happen at a signing.
Now, how long did you think about running up to the cops real fast and asking them to take some notes to put that in the book, to put that in a future book? You had to have thought about it for at least a second.
Well, you know, I think at that point you just press onwards. You know what I mean? I will say the funniest thing that I ever did was I was researching one of the books on how you make a pipe bomb. Uh-huh. And I needed to know how to do this. And someone from the bomb squad at a local police department had agreed to talk with me. And so I called the main number and I said, you know, may I speak to so-and-so. Actually, the person's name was Corky. I love that a guy named Corky works on the bomb squad. And, yeah. And the receptionist said, well, can I ask what you're calling about? And I said, yes, I need to know how to make a bomb. And she didn't miss a beat. She goes, let me put you right through. And I thought, well, of course they want to learn. They want to talk to me. If I want to learn how to make a bomb, they're going to be very interested in me.
Mm-hmm. So you get the first-hand knowledge right there, then.
You get the first-hand knowledge, but people look at you strangely.
So let's talk, you know, a little bit in the near future and the far future. But do you have some events and things that you're going to the rest of the year that your fans can, you know, kind of meet you? And, you know, can you give us a little bit of insight about what's next for you and your next book with Sam Capra?
Well, I have only one more signing left for this book that I'm doing tonight in San Antonio at 5:00 at the Twig Bookshop, which is over in the Pearl Brewery. People in San Antonio will know that. The biggest thing I'm going to is BoucherCon, which is the World Mystery Conference, and that is September 15th,
It's October. October.
No, this year it's September.
It is in September? Uh-oh.
It is in September. They're doing it earlier.
Okay. Well, it is St. Louis, and, you know.
In St. Louis. And I'm going to get to do Ridley Pearson is the Toastmaster, and I get to do the interview with him this year, which I just found out about, so I'm really excited.
Now, and is BoucherCon one that you go to all the time? And you're right, it's September 15th through the 18th in St. Louis, which is another conference, which is really great for fans, so you get a nice up-close personal look with the fans.
I guess it's probably, I think it may still be the biggest of the mystery and thriller conferences. But actually, I don't go every year. This is my first year going in maybe like 5 years. So
okay.
I'm really excited about going this year.
So now, what's coming up next after Adrenaline for Sam Kapper, though?
For Sam,
everybody likes to know.
Everyone likes to know, especially because I ended Adrenaline on kind of a cliffhanger. People might want to know that before they start it. The second book in the Sam series is called The Last Minute, and it will be out next summer.
And so you got it finished, and it's ready to roll, huh?
It's finished. It's done, and I'm almost finished with Sam number 3.
Nice. Well, Jeff, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody, Jeff Abbott, latest book, Adrenaline, available everywhere, jeffabbott.com. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. We might see you at BoucherCon. If not, you know, we'll catch up later and definitely talk to you when the next book comes out next year.
Thank you so much, John, and good luck with Carmageddon.
Yeah, really. I ain't going anywhere near it. All right. You have a good day and enjoy
you
yourself.
Too, sir.
Have fun at your signing tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, everybody, that was best-selling author Jeff Abbott, Adrenaline, just hit number 23 on the New York Times bestseller list. It's a book you need to go out and read. It's a fast-paced thriller. Like he says, family-oriented. It's a new character, Sam Kapper. You can find out more information at jeffabbott.com. You know, he sells books wherever they're available on all, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all over the Internet. And you can have a chance to meet Jeff if you've never been to BoucherCon in St. Louis. September 15th to 18th, it's a great event. It's very fan-friendly. You can go walk right up and meet your author. So if you're a fan of Jeff or anybody, you know, Heather Graham or, you know, Boyd Morrison, anybody, just walk right up, say hi, shake their hand. Hey, what's going on? How you doing? They love to talk to fans. So it's definitely an event that you want to go to. Speaking of events, we always kind of give a little background of Thriller Fest, and we went to Thriller Fest again this year, and you want to talk about a first-class event. If you're an aspiring author, if you are an author or somebody that, you know, just wants to maybe learn how to write or you're just a fan of writing, you know, Thriller Fest, which is presented by ITW, which is International Thriller Writers Association, and if you are a thriller writer and you've not joined this, as long as you are being approved by one of the, you know, approved publishers, you can join ITW for free. And, you know, you can get yourself involved here in Thriller Fest and go. It's definitely an investment that you need to take into your writing to take you just that little bit further. You know, Andrew Gross, our next guest coming up here, you know, he gives great you know, advice and teaches classes, you know, in what's called Craft Fest, which is the first half of Thriller Fest. You know, Steve Barry, Doug Lyle, you know, Wendy Corsi Staub, all of the big authors that are there are teaching you. You know, there's panels on what's going on for you to just take in as much information as you can possible. It's always in New York City, and it's always, like I said, a first-class event that you need to go to. And we, you know, we met Andrew out there last year, and then, you know, we talked to him on the radio about his book, Reckless, and we were able to get him here for to talk about his latest one, Eyes Wide Open. So without further ado, I want to go ahead and I want to welcome Andrew Gross, best-selling author here of his latest book, Eyes Wide Open. So, Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How's it going there?
It's going good as long as you stay out of the traffic with the Carmageddon here.
Yeah. We have our own traffic here. I'm in East Hampton, which is the longest Montauk Highway, the slowest 20 miles in America. But I think you have me beat now. You have us beat there.
For this weekend, we got a lot of people beat. So that's not a good thing.
I know. I heard you talking about Craft Fest. I've taught a course there every year, and it's not only it's a fun thing to do. I it's one of the things I look forward to there. So.
Yeah, it's the one thing I always tell any author that emails me, and maybe they're new and they're not really sure what to do, and I say, okay, the first thing you have to do is go to, you know, the ITW website and think about how you're going to get to Thriller Fest and get into Craft Fest and start learning and just taking in all that information, because it's only going to make you better when you have someone like yourself teaching a class there for an hour, maybe, you know, a couple of them, and they're able to just take in all that knowledge, something you weren't able to have when you were coming, you know, up
That's,
through the ranks.
Well, all true. We got it in different ways, like the University of Iowa writing program, but
right.
I think it all fits together nonetheless. And of course, the thing that Thriller Fest and a lot of these conferences do that were not, you're right, around when I was coming in, which isn't that long ago, is that it gives people access. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, the idea of sort of contacting an author you admire, you know, you'd kiss the ground if you wrote a letter and somebody ever replied to it. Now, you know, anyone in the world writes in, or you go to these conferences and you're talking to the people, you know, to your little heroes. It's sort of like going to fantasy baseball camp perpetually.
Right.
You know?
And so you came here with eyes wide open, and this is your latest book, and I just want to remind everybody that your website is andrewgrossbooks.com to find out all the information about, you know, what you have going on and what you had going on with all of your books in the past. But this one, you're drawing extremely on a personal level from your own experiences. Explain a little bit why you decided to go that way, because that had to have been a very emotional time with you writing this book.
Well, you know, like most thriller writers, we always sort of, where do the ideas come from? I suppose everybody either has some really cool historical what if or stories that they, you know, cut out of the papers or rip from the headlines. As you say, this one comes from two events in my own life. One of them, sadly, was the suicide of a young nephew of mine who jumped off a famous landmark cliff in California, the Mara Bay Rock, about 2 years ago. And the other was this encounter that I had years and years ago when I was a kid with Charles Manson, a year before Charles Manson became Charles Manson. I've sort of, you know, found a way to link these two events. The Manson-like figure in my book has been in jail for decades, but still sort of manages to control things fairly chillingly from the inside. This was actually the easiest book that I've ever written, only because we lived it. Everything came out well. It's a family story as much as this book sort of reads like a memoir with lots of chills and plot reversals. And because of that, you know, it has that sort of personal anecdotal quality that a memoir does. So it wrote easily to me. The tough part, I think, are the people who were mentioned in the story who may, you know, like my brother who lost his son, who may have wanted a more factual story about his son as opposed to what I did, which was use it as a platform to weave my own story.
And, you know, when you decided to do this, I mean, did it come with, like, a lot of apprehension? Was it something that you were just like, I don't know if I should do it, and then you just said, you know, I think it's something that I have to do?
Didn't feel it that way. I mean, just to be emotionally fair, Michael comes from a different set of, he's 8 years, my brother, 8 years older than me. I came from different marriages. It wasn't an Ozzy and Harriet family. I sort of, you know, had a fairly distant relationship with him for a lot of my life. It's actually closer now, strangely. And his son, who was a very troubled kid, bipolar and schizophrenic, on whom the character in the book is based, or one of them. He's been to our house twice, and you know, for whatever reason, my own kids were a little put off by him. So it wasn't sort of the close-knitness of a family that you might say that this is a wrenching thing to write about and that you're exercising your own demons. No, it wrote easily because I lived through it. And on the other hand, I wanted to honor this kid who didn't have much in his life to be honored for. And I think anyone who reads this book, anyone who reads my books, I guess whatever you expect to happen, I think you can be sure won't. And in this case, this young man who the book starts out tragically, I think ends up fairly heroically, because the nature of Eyes Wide Open is it a suicide or is it not a suicide? And as clues begin to come out where you may think it's not a suicide, the book really is the path towards what really happened up on that rock.
And the main character, I mean, you have a couple here, but your main character is Jay Yerlich. And again, then you have his brother Charlie with Evan, is the nephew that died in the apparent suicide, who the kind of the story is centered around and the thrilling part. So, you know, how complex, you know, are these characters, you know, Jay and Charlie, and their kind of emotional bonds that kind of come together? Is that something that, you know, that the readers will be able to, like, really get deep into when they're doing it and just kind of, like, immerse themselves in the emotion?
I think it's a pretty rich book, and it's really a story of two brothers, one of them successful, one of them wayward, a child of the 60s who had moved out to California decades ago and had these two brothers who went down different paths in life, one of them comes out to comfort his brother after his son has killed himself, supposedly, and one begins to find clues that maybe the suicide isn't exactly what it seems, and the other brother, the father, wants these things to remain hidden for reasons that are in the book. So I think it's a pretty emotional ride. I mean, most people are sort of saying there are tears at the end of this book. Certainly, critically, it's the best book I've done. I've gotten Kirkus stars, and People magazine this week named it as one of the top three books of the summer, thrillers of the summer, and all kinds of starred stuff that makes me sort of think that it's a much richer personal book than anything I've done before.
Yeah, I mean, how excited were you when, you know, you realized that, you know, People magazine and you have Kirkus and you have, you know, all these great reviews come back? Did that just kind of, like, put the stamp and, you know, you're just kind of like, I did it the correct way, and it just kind of validates, you know, the book that much more in your mind?
Yeah, I think it does. I'm not really a believer in write what you know. I would argue against that to sort of young writers or to aspiring writers. I think that's a misstatement. But in this case, I was writing what I know, and I think that sort of feeling came out pretty vividly in the book. So, I think so. Of course, I'm not really the biggest believers in reviews. You know, a lot of people get swelled heads about them. I always, you know, my corollary is the better reviewed the book, the worse it ends up selling. So my fingers are crossed. So, you know, it just came out on Tuesday, and, you know, hopefully that won't be the case in this one.
So you'd almost rather have one of those, like, those really bad ones, and people are like, I want to go read this, it's not like that, and then you sell it, you know, sell them more books because you get, like, more negative press and you do positive press sometimes.
You know, I just think that there's sort of two communities in the thriller business. There are the people that are at the top of the bestseller list who are sort of churning out books possibly with some assistance every year, and they're really writing for the masses. And then there are people that are, you know, trying as well to sort of elevate the craft a little bit, and might be more in the mystery side of it, if that distinction is, you know, even worthwhile. And they're all trying to sell a lot more, and, you know, they may win all the awards, but they're just not getting the sales. So, you know, up to this point, I haven't had the reviews. I think coming out of the Jim Patterson fold, you know, sometimes even what you do well, you get trivialized at, because it's obviously impossible to throw a compliment to Patterson, and it's just as easy to say that anybody who wrote books with him has one, either sold out, or two, can't really stylistically be very much, you know, different. So I think it takes a while to sort of create your own voice and identity, that people recognize you, you know, for what you do well, as opposed to what Patterson might do well. So,
And, you know, I'm reminding everybody we're speaking here with Andrew Gross, best-selling author here of his latest book, Eyes Wide Open, which came out July the 12th, so it's available everywhere. His website is andrewgrossbooks.com. Now, you know, we were just speaking with Jeff Abbott. He had never done a series before. He decided to do something and start his new series. Now, is there a series, you know, coming up in the future? Is that something that you're thinking of doing, or are you just going to kind of stay here, you know, with the standalones that you've kind of been doing, starting with the Blue Zone and working your way up here through?
Well, actually, I mean, I did have three books with Ty Houck, you know, Reckless, Dark Tide, and Eyes, and Don't Look Twice. And I sort of feel like I've walked away a little bit from a series on this book. So, you know, it's a hard call. You know, myself, I like writing standalones. But people get attached to a character. I get emails every day. I want to bring Houck back. And the next book is a standalone as well. But I think the one after that, which would be for, where are we here? That would be for 2013. It will be a Houck book. I just sort of find that when you start doing these series, that you start writing predictably because so much of it is I don't want to say formulaic. That's not really what I mean. But so much of it is dictated by the locale that your series character lives in, by the nature of the profession that he's in. And you know, I did three books centered around Greenwich, Connecticut, with Ty Houck, and I'll get back to it. But you know, the hidden genius of Jack Reacher is that he does, nothing is the same, you know, other than the clothes he's wearing from book to book. And I not having that luxury in what I chose to do, I just sort of like. I like creating new characters, and I feel that I write the freshest when I'm able to create new characters. And so, you know, I'll probably get back because everybody seems to want this damn guy to come back. So, but this one and next year's are standalones.
Yeah, and I think that you brought an interesting thing. I mean, as a writer and as a creator of art, which is what, you know, this is, isn't it good to kind of start with a blank canvas instead of starting with the canvas already half full, and then you're just filling in the, you know, just filling in the rest of it?
Yeah, I think it, you know, my gut, you know, my feeling is I think it creates the best books. And I think when you look at most of these series, the best books usually are some of the earlier books. And you know, for that reason, of course, there's a whole economic side to it that justifies and encourages these sort of things. And when you're turning out a book a year, also, it's a little easier to have, of the 10 things that you have to find their way into a book, it's sort of comforting when, you know, four of them are already sort of dictated by the series.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, agree. I love standalones. I'm not a big fan of series unless they're kind of short and I know there's an ending. Kind of like the Harry Potter, you know, it's kind of was done on seven,
right,
and it was something to look forward to,
right,
where it's difficult for me to not really have that ending. So that's why I think I'm a standalone person myself.
Well, my next book is about an incident that happened to me in Houston, Texas, when I was on book tour last year, where unfortunately it really isn't unfortunately, it's almost amazingly. I got pulled out of a car for a minor traffic violation, and something escalated with the with the officer, and I got handcuffed, thrown in the back of the car impounded.
You're on cops, weren't you? You're on cops.
And told I was going to jail. And then I had all these people barking some very harrowing 9/11 kind of questions at me, which comes, you know, it's the beginning of the book, except, you know, my situation ended somewhat benignly, and I was able to do my book event that evening. But for my character in the book, as well as for the arresting cop, it doesn't quite end as benignly. So that's what next year's book is about. And as long as I keep getting these material from my own lives, I feel like things are going to roll pretty smoothly for me.
Jesus, you just get pulled over in the middle of Houston, and they're just asking about 9/11 questions. I mean,
they weren't asking me. I was in handcuffs, and they were barking them, John.
Okay, I mean, they were nice. Okay. So, you know, we always kind of wonder, because, you know, you've been doing this for quite some time, and I asked Jeff the same thing, and I'm kind of, you know, wanting to try to get a consensus to try to see what's happening in the future with publishing changing their landscaping so much. You know, what do you kind of see as some of the biggest challenges that are facing yourself and maybe newer writers or even more established writers in the future with the way that everything has just been changed so fast,
yeah,
so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's changing this weekend because it looks like Borders is finally going out. So it's, you know, fluid even as we're talking here. It's an impossible question to answer. It's a double-edged sword. I am not one who does not like to embrace the future. I'm not one, because I spent 20 years in business myself, I'm not one who sort of looks at these things as threats. They're not. But finding a way to market yourself through, you know, the digital avenues is perhaps, you know, more difficult than there's no browsing section, really. There's no front table of a store just to meander through. I guess I'm one of those lucky guys that has a long-term contract with HarperCollins. And while the world is shifting, I'm actually staying pretty stable, but directionally. But, you know, everybody's just going to have to make their case that this is turning into a paperless world. And instead of bemoaning it, everyone's got to learn how to live with it. You know, I hope that the digital world is elastic, and that, you know, basically if the prices of books is cut, the demand will increase by a proportional amount or more. So that ultimately there are more revenues that are being generated than not. But my world is already 50% digital. I mean, this book will be 50% digital, and then you throw Amazon shipping books on top of it, and two-thirds of my business is two-thirds of the inventory is virtual inventory. So you can't ignore it. You know, I mean, anyone who's walked into a Costco sees that their titles are down, and that the book footprint is getting smaller. You know, Doors and Doors are closing. You know, whether Borders or in Indies, and ultimately it's going to become sort of a vertical world, and so. So I'm just not one. I'm not sure I know the answers to it, but I know the answers aren't standing in the way of it. Let's put it that way. Everyone has to learn how to do it. The beauty of it, I think, for aspiring writers is that the playing field becomes somewhat leveled. And, you know, we hear stories about people who, for whatever reason, didn't make their way into traditional publishing but have made successes of themselves without it. And let me be honest. You're going to get me in a candid moment here. I'm not really a believer in a lot of the crap that's out there. That there's a handful of authors who are sort of, you know, running around, you know, feeling like they're on top of the world because they've been able to stay ahead of the curve digitally. I won't name them. Their names are known. And my own feeling is that, you know, my own worry is that there's going to be a lot of mediocrity that finds its way, for whatever reason, into the public arena and might even get celebrated. And I'm not saying that the only good books are books that, you know, editors assist on and publishers print. But I do think that in the playing field being so leveled, it does open the door to a lot of junk. That, and, you know, if people want to read junk, you know, literally books that aren't even rewritten, because the people who are most successful doing this are turning out several books a year. And I think they're careless and sort of uninspiring. You know, that's one of the things that you got to worry about in this world also.
Yeah, that's the one thing. That's the one danger that I see for, you know, authors like yourself and, you know, that have been able to, you know, stand out and forge their way, is it's going to be difficult for consumers when you go on Amazon, because, like you said, you just can't walk into Barnes & Noble and you see your book sitting there on the front table. and those are the ones that people seem to gravitate to. At least 80% of them are going to walk in and see those books.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm actually one of those people.
I mean, so how, when someone's browsing Amazon, you get 75,000 results just looking in mystery and thriller. How are they supposed to choose from 75,000?
Well, you know, here's my feeling, and there is an element to which this has already started. I mean, everyone knows the Zagat guides for restaurants, and I think ultimately that's the way that books are going to be sold on the internet. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be some sort of ranking system, and people are going to look under thrillers, and they're going to see five-star thrillers, four-star thrillers. You're going to see consumer reactions, and I actually think that's a valid way to go about it. You know, I'm always oddly more interested in my Amazon consumer responses than I am some of the reviews that I may or may not get. You know, my goal is to please my readers and satisfy my readers and entertain my readers and to some degree challenge them, but I want them to be happy at the end of the book, happy with the product. So I think that's what you're going to do. I mean, in terms of browsing, you're going to go online, you're going to look up thrillers, and you can either go by author or one of the categories will be best, you know, five stars, like you would in a Zagat or something, where you're looking for 27 in the food category.
You know, you're the first one to ever say that you actually like your Amazon reviews, where most authors say, I don't even want to look at them anymore. I don't even look at my Amazon reviews anymore. They just try to stay off of it because it drives them crazy.
Well, you can't get emotionally wrapped up in every one of them. There's a lot of dopes, and there's a lot of people with access to grind. I mean, my gosh, I've gotten one-star reviews, and someone says, anyone who wrote with Patterson, I was only getting one star from me. I mean, I don't even know if he ever touched the book. So, you know, from an author standpoint, all you're doing is the math after that of going, oh, crap, one star. What is that doing to my 4.5-star rating, you know, blah, blah, here, you know. But the truth is I want my readers to be satisfied with the product. And I have to say that I think all my books have been sort of 4 stars on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I don't think I've been less. That said, I'd be much more taken to heart if I was less than that than if I got a crummy, you know, Publishers Weekly review or something like that. You know, I mean, to me, that's the important barometer.
The thing that we know here at Suspense Radio and Suspense Magazine is that you have delivered every single time. You know, you were lucky to get your start with James Patterson, get your name, but then you have forged yourself here ahead way beyond, you know, with your 6th book here, Eyes Wide Open. I mean, it is definitely the deep, rich, emotional kind of insight that I think a lot of authors try to reach that you've been able to do, and people can almost, you know, you literally have put a piece of yourself physically almost into this book.
Well, thank you, John.
And that's very difficult to do.
I appreciate it too. I'd like to think you're right. Yeah. I mean, I do feel that, and I'd have to say it's the book I'm proudest of. Of course, every author says that about their latest book, but I think just by the nature of the fact that it's such a family-driven book to me, and has, you know, so much of it is based in traumatic events from our own family. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So I want to thank you. I mean, I, again, as a fan and as a person who does it, I just want to thank you so much for writing these kinds of books, because it is good for the fans to know, and I think it's important for them to know, that this is something that you've literally put a piece of yourself into your books instead of just the ideas you've written about. This is actually a physical piece of yourself here in the book, and people can kind of see a little bit about, you know, what you've gone through and what you've had to go through to get, you know, Eyes Wide Open out to the public.
Thanks for recognizing that. You know, The truth is, there are various, you know, there was all sort of categories of thriller writers, and a lot of them are dealing with history, and a lot of them are dealing with police, and a lot of, you know, my books really center around family, and I love sort of the idea of families that fall from grace or families that are hiding buried secrets for years. I mean, to me, this is sort of the richest thing to mine as an author, and I love the relationships in a family, the betrayals, and, you know, The Blue Zone was about a betrayal between a father and a daughter, you know, and this is the 2nd book I've written about warring brothers. So, you know, to me, this is sort of the fertile ground of books, and the fact that you can turn them into page-turners and thrillers, as opposed to, you know, fathers and sons like Turgenev or something I think actually makes thriller writing one of the most sort of germane and relevant genres there is. I mean, there's a handful of us that are sort of doing these family-centric thrillers, and, I love them, thanks. So, to me, it's what's exciting, the most exciting part of my craft.
Well, Andrew, again, we want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a little insight into your personal life on how Eyes Wide Open came about and the struggles and things that you guys had to go through in order for this to make happen. So we want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing that with us. Much success with the book. Much success.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you, John, and hope the traffic clears out there Monday.
Yes. And we will talk with you soon, and we will see you, I'm sure, on the road when we all meet at events.
Okay, super.
All right, have a good one.
Bye now.
So, again, everybody, that was best-selling author Andrew Gross. His website, andrewgrossbooks.com, with his latest book, Eyes Wide Open. It's been out since July the 12th. And like we said, very much of a personal part of himself that he put into this with, events that happened with his family. And he's been able to, web together this thriller that has just a lot of emotion and just a lot of different things that go into this book. It's definitely one that I totally agree with People Magazine. That's one that you need to go out and get, one of the top three, ones of the summer. Eyes Wide Open by Andrew Gross. You can get it where all books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you find them. It's just a great read, and it's something that I think that you'll enjoy here coming through the summer. Well, I'll tell you what, we want to thank everybody for, listening to us today. It's been a great show. We had Jeff Abbott on earlier talking about adrenaline, and his website is jeffabbott.com. That's another great book to go out and pick up with his latest stab here at a great series with Sam Capra. He's never done a series before, so Jeff Abbott is a great author to go out and get and go back and listen if you are just kind of tuning in and you haven't heard. Go back and listen to all the replays we have. We have a lot of great authors coming up next week, and I know we have Catherine Coulter, we have Alan Jacobson. Tomorrow we're having a new author on, Sean Murray, and he's going to be joining us for a brief edition of Suspense Radio, about a half-hour edition. We're going to speak with him about his latest book and his newest adventure. So we want to thank everybody here, for joining us. We know it's going to be a nice weekend to get out, do your thing, whatever you got to do. And we will see you all tomorrow for, again, an abbreviated edition of Suspense Radio with Sean Murray. Have a great night, great afternoon. I'm John Robb, your host. See you later.